It's time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you every week by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joins us as always. Hello there, Mr. Meehan.
You dare talk over that riff.
I did. You know, I thought I was either run or DMC. I'm not sure which one.
That was the original, wasn't it?
That was, yeah. But I was going to talk over it as if I were one of them.
Although the Run DMC version came out probably when I was cognizant, I was raised musically, at least rock and roll wise, by my older brother, who was the youngest of three of my mother's first marriage, and he supplied me with, you know, the Ted Nugent, the Aerosmith, the Van Halen, the early Metallica before I, you know, he's like, no, this is Metallica. The popular stuff you're listening to is not Metallica.
No.
So I was edumacated. Oh gosh, there was many an afternoon that I wore out their first greatest hit. I'm sure there's been a multitude since. Anyway, how's everybody doing? It's kind of a suddenly dreary day, but I hope everybody's in good spirits.
Yeah. We can deal with a little gray out there. It's okay.
It's Maine, right?
Right.
You take the good with the bad with the good. Apparently, the wonderful mowing job I did, it feels like 2 days ago, is now completely irrelevant. So whatever is happening, it's really good for everything growing outside, which is evident in the fact that I cannot stop sneezing today. It is ungodly. My manager, Morgan, informs me that it is something like almost five times the dangerous level of pollen outside.
Oh, great, great.
Like, I don't know what that means, but I definitely I feel it. I'm sure a lot of people do. Well, hopefully it's not tying up your nose too much, and if you have a nice beverage planned for this evening, hopefully you can still smell it, because, you know, it does get tough at this time of year. So just to remind everybody what we've been sort of talking about, this segment. We were talking about the history of why grapes get planted where, essentially, and why we've decided to do this grape here and maybe not this grape here, and after they grow, what do we do with them? Because not all grapes just go through the normal fermentation process. Obviously, some things are done a little bit differently, like port, which we'll talk about in either next week or the following. But we were talking about Burgundy last week and sort of the history of the religious orders, the Cistercian monks, keeping track of where things grew best. And out of this kind of came the idea that, you know, this grape grows better here, this grape grows better here. And obviously that's changing, with climate change. But did just kind of want to touch, because we're not going to touch on Burgundy further. I kind of leave it alone during the World War, the World Tour, rather. Pardon me, Freudian slip. So I just wanted to mention that there's something to keep in mind about Burgundy, which is very strange and odd, aside from the fact that Pinot Noir is their red grape, although all the Pinot family is allowed, right? Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, etc. And Chardonnay is the white grape, again, with asterisks. It's also important to remember that the region of Chablis, or Chablis, and that also plays into the fact that I was reminding everybody that all of our fighting folks went, you know, literally through these regions, through minefields with tanks and ruts and mutts. And Chablis was definitely one of these regions that they went through. It was part of the pass, basically up into Alsace, where which is one of the main corridors into Germany, and hence Germany into France. So they were there, and Chablis is about 60 kilometers separated from the rest of Burgundy. It is only a white appellation. There is Pinot Noir grown there, mostly in the southwestern corner, the village of Irancy, and some others. But they are not, if you ever see Chablis, it needs to be white, or at least heading towards, if it's an older Chablis. But if it is red, danger. it is important because it is two subsoils, the Portlandian and the Kimmeridgian seabeds. These are ancient seabeds that provide the famed chalkiness of Chablis. It's also important to remember that that subsoil, as we go through, is also the subsoil of part of Champagne, part of Sancerre in the Loire Valley. It's also the subsoil that you see in the White Cliffs of Dover, which, when we get to sort of the rest of Europe and the rest of the world, etc., they are growing Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, just like they do in Burgundy and Champagne and Sancerre in the southern part of England now, because this terroir stretches that far. And so that's really what we're trying to get at, is why you're, you know, planting specific grapes here, and why all of a sudden you're planting, you know, it was laughable to think about England growing grapes, even, you know, when I started. I mean, it was obviously happening when I started this business, but people didn't really take it as seriously as they absolutely do now. You're getting very similar stuff. Again, climate change plays heavily into that. But this is important part of Burgundy, is that it's the heartland. Chablis is part of it, and its influence sort of scatters everywhere. So extending this, and we'll talk a little bit more about this next week, because I'm sure I'm going to run out of time, but I want to talk about how this started to influence this country, because there was a huge wave of, well, several waves of immigrants that were ones that came and made California wine what it is. And, you know, famous names, and again, we'll get to those when we hit California. But the wineries basically had sort of a reset button with Prohibition, and then another sort of reset button with World War II, World War I and World War II, but especially World War II. Because, again, the troops are coming home, but also mass waves of immigrants from Europe with wine-making backgrounds were coming over. They were finding the land of opportunity in places like especially California, but other places for certain. And they started to treat California vineyards like they treated their vineyards in the old world. So you started to see single vineyard ideas in America. So the America's first single vineyard, if you will, that was like this piece of land is specialer than that piece of land, was a place called Martha's Vineyard. It's in Sonoma. The Heights family was the one who planted it, and you've probably heard of Heights, and it's H-E-I-T-Z. It's no surprise. That's not a anglicized name. That's definitely a family that came over. And the big difference, and we're going to start to learn this when we go through the rest of the world, is that in America, you'll have single vineyards, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're planted to any single grape. And we'll get into that and why that is. But certainly, that is when the idea of this piece of land is better than that piece of land, and here's why, started to develop here in the U.S., and that's certainly going to play into a lot of the stuff we talk about later. In the meantime, I'm sure I'm basically out of time, but I hope everybody is well. I hope everybody had a happy Mother's Day, and my best wishes to all you mothers out there, because you're fighting the good fight and you're putting up with people like me. God bless you.
Thanks, Eric. We'll see you next week.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Eric Mahan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the Bottle every Tuesday here on Downtown.